Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's 1:33 here on a Tuesday afternoon. Dana and Parks come your way coming up at 2 o'clock. The headline out of ABC News this morning was the feds to let states tap into opioid funds to deal with the surge in meth and cocaine use. The nation's drug addiction crisis has morphed into a deadly new direction with more Americans hooked on meth and cocaine. And quoted in the story is a gentleman that we have on the phone with us now, Mark Stringer, who is the director of Missouri's Department of Mental Health. He oversees Missouri's efforts to prevent addiction, get drug-dependent people into treatment, and support them in a recovery. And so we're going to talk more about meth and cocaine making a comeback. Mark Stringer joins us on the line, and we really appreciate you coming on with us.
I'm glad to be here.
Talk to us first about the statement that you made in this ABC News story. Meth and cocaine are making a comeback, and they are more potent than they were during the last wave. Can you talk about that more?
Sure. And in the last time we saw a surge in the use of methamphetamines, a lot of meth was made locally with, you know, labs and homes and things like that. Then Missouri changed some laws, and the number of labs dropped precipitously, but the demand for meth did not go away. And so the Mexican cartels got involved and began supplying a meth. And it, if you look at the average purity of seized methamphetamine, back in the early days, it was when it was made locally, it was about 39% pure. Now the average purity is 93%. So those numbers have just been reversed.
What does that do?
93% pure.
And what does that do not only to the addiction rates, but to the effectiveness? I mean, are more people going to die from using that because it's not the same purity level?
Sure. That's exactly right. It becomes more addictive and more lethal.
Okay. So can you talk about the relationship between meth and cocaine use being up and the opioid crisis?
Well, it's, you know, we've seen that this, you know, going back to the beginnings of the country, we've seen, you know, patterns of drug use. There is a drug will surge, and then there are some painful, if not fatal, consequences to that. In the case of heroin and other opiates, you know, we've seen over 1,000 deaths a year in Missouri. Compare that to 1999, there were less than 100 deaths to heroin overdose. So the death rate has gone way up. People and it's become laced with a very powerful drug called fentanyl that's very lethal. And so what happens is the pendulum swings to a different group or class of drugs. Now what seems to be happening, and it's kind of spreading from the West Coast toward the East, is the rise in the use of stimulants, in particular methamphetamine and cocaine.
At what point do you find yourself sort of in a game of whack-a-mole where you're trying to, you know, you're trying to drive use of one drug down and then use of another one surges because, if the funds are taken away from getting people off of opioids, are then more people going to become addicted to opioids?
You know, that's a good question, and whack-a-mole is a good analogy because that's what it's felt like. I've been in this business for about 35 years now. So, I think part of the solution is to get away from having drug-specific funding and instead having funding for addiction, that is prevention, treatment, and recovery services. That's where I hope things are moving, so we get away from the drug-specific things and toward a more general pool of funds for people with addictions.
How much of that money going into fighting addiction, how to ask this, how much of that depends on people being willing to go get treatment and recognize that they have a problem?
You know, that's an interesting question. It's a myth that people have to hit bottom in order to benefit from treatment, or that people have to want to get into recovery. Those things aren't really true. I mean, the time to catch somebody, in fact, is when they're in crisis, when they don't know what to do next, and they're spiraling downhill. They may not have hit bottom at all, but they may have begun to lose some things. And with the right kind of interventions, you can convince a lot of people to get help.
Well, there is another story that's out today, specifically about teenagers and opioid use, and it was just a devastating number that said that of teenagers who have overdosed, fewer than a third of them get treatment after the overdose. Where is that disconnect?
The disconnect is in the supply as much as anything. There simply is not enough treatment in the country, frankly. I would love for us someday to be in a position where when someone is ready for treatment, they can get treatment that same day. They can begin their treatment that same day. And we're not there yet. We're coming closer to that in Missouri, but we're far away from the goal.
So the headline, the lead story, the lead part of this ABC News story says, alarmed by a deadly new twist in the nation's drug addiction crisis. Were you alarmed by this? That we started seeing higher numbers of cocaine and meth use, or was it just the government that was alarmed?
Well, I am the government, part of the government, and alarmed, I don't think would describe my reaction to it. Certainly concerned and disappointed, those kinds of things. But I wouldn't say alarmed because, again, I've been around a long time and I've seen a lot of trends.
There was also, and I want to do a little history with you because I know you know this, but I don't know how many people do, that there was a time when opioids were over-the-counter drugs. Early part of the 20th century, you had things like laudanum out there available, and there was some ungodly number, like 20 or 25% of the population was thought to have been functioning addicts at that point. But you didn't see the number of deaths associated with it that we do now. Is it just a matter, again, of strength of the opioids that are out there? Is that why people are dying from this when, you know, our great-grandparents probably used it every day?
Sure, and that's exactly it. It's just stronger today. And again, when it's laced with something like fentanyl, I mean, this is as much a fentanyl crisis as it is an opioid crisis. And fentanyl is an opioid, but it just takes a few grains of it to be fatal. And so, we have people that are using these more powerful drugs, and many are dying from it.
And that would beg the question about why that's out there on the market at all. I mean, is there something that fentanyl does for a patient who needs it that can't be done with another opioid or another painkiller entirely?
Well, it's again, it gets back to the issue of potency. It's very powerful, and so people who need a very powerful painkiller for legitimate medical reasons will benefit from fentanyl prescribed by a physician and administered by professionals. The trouble is that it does create a very, very intense high that someone with an opioid use disorder is constantly seeking. So it becomes desirable even though it's potentially fatal.
What conversations are happening with doctors about the rate at which these are being prescribed?
There are some pretty aggressive conversations being made. You know, the pharmaceutical companies back in the 1990s had an all-out push to get doctors to prescribe more pain medications. OxyContin had just hit the market, so pharmaceutical salesmen all over the country were telling doctors, number one, you owe it to your patients to treat their pain properly, and number two, these opiate drugs are not addictive. And to prove their case, they were carrying around an article that was supposed to be from a prestigious medical journal. Instead, it was a letter to the editor by some doctor who'd looked at a few records. So that's what really started all this. And it grew significantly. Now, many doctors, in fact, most, I would say, are being much more careful in their prescription of medications, in particular opiates. So instead of prescribing a 30-day supply following a tooth procedure, might just provide a 4-day supply, for example.
So who is it at the governmental level, and as you said, I mean, you are part of this, that's leading the way? Who's forming the policy? Is it ONDCP?
Certainly, the ONDCP has a hand in it. So does the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration at the federal level. At the state level, it's the Department of Mental Health, and with some assistance from the Department of Health and Senior Services, and some other state departments.
So when the feds say to the states, hey, money that we said you could only use to fight the opioid crisis, you can now use to fight meth and cocaine troubles, what are states going to do differently then? You know what I mean? Are they going to shift money differently to state health departments? Are they going to give more direction? What happens that's different?
Well, I think they will shift, in particular, again, in western states, California, Nevada, states like that, where meth has seen a much stronger comeback. They will be able to shift some of those opioid funds toward the prevention and treatment of people with stimulant use disorders. And so so that will happen in a big way in some of those states where meth is really the largest problem. States like Missouri, where opioids are still quite prevalent, in particular in the St. Louis area, which is where most of our opioid deaths are, you know, we need to keep our funds targeted for now. It's not to say we won't shift them in the future, but for now we need to keep them targeted, and I appreciate the flexibility that they've given us.
We're talking again with Mark Stringer, director of the Missouri Department of Mental Health, and I'm curious, you know, when it comes to the other drugs that we're talking about here with cocaine and methamphetamine, there are law enforcement problems involved in this because you've got gangs that are running this stuff. There are border problems involved in this. You know, there are so many agencies that have to get together. When you start talking about moving money from one drug, you know, one targeted drug to another, does it go across the board like that? Are we talking about money? You know, more money's going into law enforcement, gang violence, that sort of thing, or is it just the drug prevention?
Yeah, in the funding we're talking about now, this is funding that's really limited. It was appropriated for, and it's limited to use for prevention, treatment, and recovery services. There's no overlap there with law enforcement.
All right, we really appreciate the time. You came on pretty short notice here with us because we had seen the story this morning. So we appreciate the insight. Mark Stringer, director of the Missouri Department of Mental Health. We'll keep an eye on this one now.
Okay, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the visit.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.